someone who was being ordered around as much as Lissa was lately. With a deep breath, Lissa rushed forward with her next words. "Do you want to eat lunch with Christian and me tomorrow? No one would mind if you came to our lunch period. I can't promise it'll be, as exciting as you want." Avery smiled again, but this time, it was less bitter. "Well, my other plans were to get drunk by myself in my room." She lifted a bottle of what looked like whiskey out of her purse. "Scored some stuff on my own." Lissa wasn't entirely sure what kind of an answer that was. "So, I'll see you at lunch?" Now Avery hesitated, but slowly a faint gleam of hope and interest appeared on her face. Concentrating, Lissa tried to bring up her aura. She had a little difficulty at first, probably worn out from all the practice with Adrian tonight. But when she was finally able to get a grip on Avery's aura, she saw it was a mix of colors. Green, blue, and gold. Not uncommon. It was currently ringed in red, as often happened when people were upset. But right before Lissa's eyes, that redness faded. "Yeah," Avery said at last. "That would be great." "I think this is as far as we can go today." On the other side of the world, Sydney's voice startled me out of Lissa's thoughts. I didn't know how long I'd been daydreaming, but Sydney had turned off the main highway and was driving us into a small town that fit perfectly with my backwoods images of Siberia. In fact, town was a total exaggeration. There were a few scattered houses, a store, and a gas station. Farmland stretched beyond the buildings, and I saw more horses than cars. The few people who were out stared at our car in amazement. The sky had turned deep orange, and the sun was sinking farther and farther into the horizon. Sydney was right. It was nearly nightfall, and we needed to be off the road. "We're only a couple hours away at most," she continued. "We made really good time and should get there pretty quickly in the morning." She drove to the other side of the village, which took, like, a minute, and pulled up in front of a plain white house with a barn beside it. "Here's where we're staying." We got out of the car and approached the house. "Are these friends of yours?" "Nope, never met them, but they're expecting us." More mysterious alchemist connections. The door was answered by a friendly-looking human in her 20s who urged us to come inside. She only spoke a few words of English, but Sydney's translation skills carried us through. Sydney was more outgoing and charming than I'd seen her thus far, probably because our hosts weren't despicable vampiric offspring. You wouldn't think riding in a car all day would be tiring, but I felt exhausted and was anxious to get an early start in the morning. So after dinner and a little TV, Sydney and I went to the room that had been prepared for us. It was small and plain, but had two twin beds covered in thick, fluffy blankets. I snuggled into mine, grateful for the softness and the warmth, and wondered if I'd dream of Lissa or Adrian. I didn't. I did, however, wake up to a slight wave of nausea rolling through me. The nausea that told me there was a Strigoi nearby. Chapter 6. I bolted upright, every part of me awake and alert. There were no city lights to shine through the window, and it took me several seconds to make out anything in the darkened room. Sydney was curled up in her own bed, her face unusually at peace as she slept. Where was the Strigoi? Definitely not in our room. Was it in the house? Everyone had said the road to Dimitri's town was dangerous. Still, I would have thought Strigoi would be going after Moroi and Dompiers, though humans were a big part of their diet too. Thinking of the nice couple who'd welcomed us into their home, I felt something tight clench in my chest. No way would I let anything happen to them. Slipping quietly out of the bed, I grabbed a hold of my stake and crept from the room without disturbing Sydney. No one else was awake, and as soon as I was in the living room, the nausea went away. Okay, the Strigoi wasn't inside, which was a good thing. It was outdoors, apparently on the side of the house near my room. Still moving silently, I went out the house's front door and walked around the corner, as quiet as the night around me. The nausea grew stronger as I approached the barn, and I couldn't help but feel smug. I was going to surprise this Strigoi who thought it could sneak into a tiny human village for dinner. There, right near the barn's entrance, I could see a long shadow moving. Gotcha, I thought. I readied the stake and started to spring forward. And then something struck me on the shoulder. I stumbled, astonished, and looked into the face of a Strigoi. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the shadow by the barn materialize into another Strigoi striding forward. Panic shot through me. There were two, and my secret detection system hadn't been able to tell the difference. Worse, they'd gotten the drop on me. A thought immediately flashed into my mind. What if one's Dimitri? It wasn't. At least this close one wasn't. It was a woman. I'd yet to get a feel for the second one. That one was approaching from my other side, moving fast. I had to deal with this immediate threat, though, and swiped the woman with my stake, hoping to wound her. But she dodged so quickly I hardly saw her move. She struck out toward me in an almost casual way. I wasn't fast enough to react and went flying toward the other Strigoi, a guy who was not Dimitri. I responded quickly, leaping up and kicking him. I held the stake out, creating distance between us. But it did little good when the woman came up from behind and grabbed me, jerking my body against hers. I gave a muffled cry and felt her hands on my throat. She was probably going to break my neck, I realized. It was a fast, easy technique for Strigoi that then let them drag off a victim for feeding. I struggled, jostling her hands slightly, but as the other Strigoi leaned over us, I knew it was useless. They'd surprised me. There were two of them. They were strong. Panic surged in me again, an overwhelming sense of fear and desperation. I was afraid every time I fought Strigoi, but this fear was reaching a breaking point. It was unfocused and out of control, and I suspected it was touched by a bit of the madness and darkness I'd absorbed from Lyssa. The feelings exploded within me, and I wondered if they'd destroy me before the Strigoi did. I was in very real danger of dying here, of letting Sydney and the others get killed. The rage and distress of that thought were smothering. Then, suddenly, it was like the earth burst open. Translucent forms glowing softly in the darkness sprang up everywhere. Some looked like normal people. Others were horrible, their faces gaunt and skull-like. Ghosts. Spirits. They surrounded us, their presence making my hair stand on end and sending a splitting headache through my skull. The ghosts turned toward me. I'd had this happen before on a plane, when apparitions had swarmed and threatened to consume me. I braced myself, trying desperately to summon up the strength to build barriers that would shut me off from the spirit world. It was a skill I'd had to learn, one I usually kept in place without any effort. The desperation and panic of this situation had cracked my control. In that horrible, blood-curdling moment, I again selfishly wished Mason hadn't found peace and left this world. I would have felt better if his ghost were here. Then I realized I wasn't their target. The ghosts were mobbing the two Strigoi. The spirits didn't have solid forms, but every place they touched and passed through me felt like ice. The female Strigoi immediately began waving her arms to fend the apparitions off, snarling in rage and something almost like fear. The ghosts didn't appear to be able to hurt the Strigoi, but they were apparently pretty annoying and distracting. I staked the male Strigoi before he ever saw me coming. Immediately, the ghosts around him moved to the woman. She was good. I'd give her that. Despite struggling to fend the spirits off, she was still able to dodge my attacks fairly well. A lucky punch from her made stars burst before my eyes and sent me into the barn wall. I still had that ghost-induced splitting headache, and my head slamming into the barn didn't help. Staggering up, dizzy, I made my way back to her and continued my efforts to get a shot in at her heart. She managed to keep her chest out of my range, at least until one particularly terrifying ghost caught her off guard. Her momentary distraction gave me my chance, and I staked her too. She fell to the ground, leaving me alone with the spirits. With the Strigoi, the ghosts had clearly wanted to attack them. With me, it was a lot like on the plane. They seemed fascinated by me, desperate to get my attention. Only with dozens of phantoms swarming, it might as well have been an attack. Desperately, I tried again to summon my walls, to block the ghosts off from me as I'd done long ago. The effort was excruciating. Somehow, my out-of-control emotions had brought the spirits, and while I was calmer now, that control was harder to bring about. My head continued throbbing. Gritting my teeth, I focused every ounce of my strength into blocking out the ghosts. "Go away," I hissed. "I don't need you anymore." For a moment, it looked like my efforts were going to be useless. Then, slowly, one by one, the spirits began to fade. I felt the control I'd learned before gradually slip into place. Soon, there was nothing there but me, the darkness, and the barn. And Sydney. I noticed her just as I collapsed to the ground. She was running out of the house in her pajamas, face pale. Kneeling at my side, she helped me sit up, legitimate fear all over her. "Rose, are you okay?" I felt like every scrap of energy in my brain and body had been sucked out. I couldn't move. I couldn't think. "No," I told her. And then I passed out. I dreamed of Dimitri again, his arms around me, and beautiful face leaning over to care for me as he'd done so often when I was sick. Memories of things past came to me. The two of us laughing over some joke. Sometimes, in these dreams, he'd carry me away. Sometimes we'd be riding in a car. Occasionally, his face would start to take on that fearsome Strigoi image that always tormented me. Then I'd quickly order my mind to brush such thoughts away. Dimitri had taken care of me so many times and had always been there when I needed him. It had gone both ways, though. Admittedly, he had not seemed to end up in the infirmary as much as me. That was just my luck. Even when he was injured, he wouldn't acknowledge it. And as I dreamed and hallucinated, images came to me of one of the few times I'd been able to take care of him. Just before the school had been attacked, Dimitri had been involved in a number of tests with me and my fellow novices to see how well we reacted to surprise assaults. Dimitri was so tough that he was almost impossible to beat, though he still got bruised up a number of times. I'd run into him in the gym once during these tests, surprised to see a cut on his cheek. It was hardly fatal, but there was a fair amount of blood showing. "Do you realize you're bleeding to death?" I'd exclaimed. It was kind of an exaggeration, but still. He touched his cheek absentmindedly and seemed to notice the injury for the first time.
"I wouldn't quite go that far. It's nothing."
"It's nothing until you get an infection."
"You know that's not likely," he said obstinately.
That was true. Maroi, aside from contracting the occasional rare disease, as Victor had, hardly ever got sick. We Dompiers had inherited that from them, just as Sydney's tattoo gave her some protection. Nonetheless, I wasn't about to let Dimitri bleed all over. "Come on," I said, pointing to the small bathroom in the gym. My voice had been fierce, and to my surprise, he'd actually obeyed. After wetting a washcloth, I gently cleaned his face. He continued protesting at first, but finally fell quiet. The bathroom was small, and we were just a few inches from each other. I could smell his clean, intoxicating scent and studied every detail of his face and strong body. My heart raced in my chest, but we were supposed to be on good behavior, so I tried to appear cool and collected. He was eerily calm, too, but when I brushed his hair back behind his ears to clean the rest of his face, he flinched. My fingertips touching his skin had sent shockwaves through me, and he'd felt them, too. He caught hold of my hand and pulled it away.
"Enough," he said, voice husky. "I'm fine."
"Are you sure?" I asked. He hadn't released my hand. We were so, so close. The small bathroom seemed ready to burst with the electricity building between us. I knew this couldn't last, but hated to let go of him. God, it was hard being responsible sometimes.
"Yes," he said.
His voice was soft, and I knew he wasn't mad at me. He was afraid, afraid of how little it would take to ignite a fire between us. As it was, I was warm all over, just from the feel of his hand. Touching him made me feel complete, like the person I was always meant to be.
"Thank you, Rosa."
He released my hand, and we left, both off to do our own things that day. But the feel of his skin and hair stayed with me for hours afterward. I don't know why I dreamed that memory after being attacked near the barn. It seemed weird that I'd dream of taking care of Dimitri when I was the one who needed care. I guess it didn't really matter what the memory was, so long as it involved him. Dimitri always made me feel better, even in my dreams, giving me strength and resolve. But as I lay in that delirium and moved in and out of consciousness, His comforting face would occasionally take on those terrible red eyes and fangs. I'd whimper, fighting hard to push that sight away. Other times, he didn't look like Dimitri at all. He turned into a man I didn't know. An older Maroi with dark hair and cunning eyes, gold jewelry glinting on his neck and ears. I'd cry out for Dimitri again, and eventually, his face would return, safe and wonderful. At one point, though, the image shifted again, this time into a woman's. Clearly, she wasn't Dimitri, but there was something about her brown eyes that reminded me of him. She was older, in her 40s maybe, and a Dampier. She laid a cool cloth across my forehead, and I realized I wasn't dreaming anymore. My body ached, and I was in an unfamiliar bed, in an unfamiliar room. No sign of the Strigoi. Had I dreamed them too?
"Don't try to move," the woman said with the faintest trace of a Russian accent. "You took some bad hits."
My eyes widened as the events by the barn came back to me. The ghosts I'd summoned up. It hadn't been a dream.
"Where's Sydney? Is she okay?"
"She's fine, don't worry."
Something in the woman's voice told me I could believe her.
"Where am I?"
"In Baia."
Baia. Baia. Somewhere in the back of my head, that name was familiar. All of a sudden, it clicked. Long, long ago, Dimitri had said it. He'd only ever mentioned his town's name once, and even though I'd tried, I had never been able to remember it. Sydney would never tell me the name, but now we were here. Dimitri's home.
"Who are you?" I asked.
"Olena," she said. "Olena Belikova."
Chapter 7. It was like Christmas morning. I wasn't usually big on God or fate, but now I was seriously reconsidering. After I'd passed out, Sydney had apparently made some frantic calls, and someone she knew in Baia had driven to us, risking the darkness, to rescue us and take us back where I could be treated. That was no doubt why I'd had vague sensations of being in a car during my delirium. It hadn't all been part of the dream. And then, somehow, out of all the Dampiers in Baia, I had been taken to Dimitri's mother. That was enough to make me seriously consider that there might truly be forces greater than me at work in this universe. No one told me exactly how it happened, but I soon learned Olena Belikova had a reputation among her peers for healing, and not even any sort of magical healing. She'd had medical training and was the person other Dampiers, and even some Maroi, went to in this region when they wanted to avoid human attention. Still, the coincidence was eerie, and I couldn't help but think there was something going on that I didn't understand. For now, I didn't worry too much about the hows and whys of my current situation. I was too busy staring wide-eyed at my surroundings and its inhabitants. Olena didn't live alone. All of Dimitri's sisters, three of them, lived in the house too, along with their kids. The family resemblance was startling. None of them looked exactly like Dimitri, but in every face, I could see him. The eyes, the smile, even the sense of humor. Seeing them fed the Dimitri withdrawal I'd had since he disappeared, and made it worse at the same time. Whenever I looked at any of them out of my peripheral vision, I'd think I was seeing Dimitri. It was like a house of mirrors with distorted reflections of him everywhere. Even the house gave me a thrill. There were no obvious signs that Dimitri had ever lived there, but I kept thinking, this is where he grew up. He walked these floors, touched these walls. As I walked from room to room, I touched the walls too, trying to draw his energy from them. I'd envision him lounging on the couch, home on break from school. I wondered if he'd slid down the banisters when he was little. The images were so real that I had to keep reminding myself that he hadn't been here in ages.
"You've made an amazing recovery,"
Olena noted the next morning after I'd been brought to her. She watched with approval as I inhaled a plate of blini. They were ultra-thin pancakes stacked and layered with butter and jam. My body always required a lot of food to keep its strength up, and I figured as long as I wasn't chewing with my mouth open or anything, I had no reason to feel bad about eating so much.
"I thought you were dead when Abe and Sydney brought you in."
"Who?" I asked between bites of food. Sydney sat at the table with the rest of the family, hardly touching her food as usual. She seemed clearly uneasy at being in a Dampier household, but when I'd first come downstairs this morning, I'd definitely seen some relief in her eyes. "Abe Mazur," said Sydney. Unless I was mistaken, some of the other people at the table exchanged knowing glances. "He's a Maroi. I didn't know how badly you were injured last night, so I called him. He drove down with his guardians. He was the one who brought you here."
Guardians? Plural. Is he royal?
Mazur wasn't a royal name, but that wasn't always a sure sign of someone's lineage. And while I was beginning to trust Sydney's social networking and connections to powerful people, I couldn't imagine why a royal would go out of his way for me. Maybe he owed the alchemists a favor. "No," she said bluntly. I frowned. A non-royal Maroi with more than one guardian? Very odd. It was clear she wasn't going to say anything else on the matter. At least not for now. I swallowed another mouthful of blini and turned my attention back to Elena. "Thanks for taking me in." Dimitri's older sister, Carolina, sat at the table too, along with her baby girl and son, Paul. Paul was about 10 and seemed fascinated by me. Dimitri's teenage sister, Victoria, was also there. She appeared to be a little younger than me. The third Belikov sister was named Sonia and had left for work before I woke up. I'd have to wait to meet her.
"Did you really kill two Strogoi all by yourself?"
Paul asked me.
"Paul?"
chastised Carolina.
"That's not a nice question to ask."
"But it's an exciting one,"
said Victoria with a grin. Her brown hair was streaked with gold, but her dark eyes sparkled so much like Dimitri's when he was excited that it tugged at my heart. Again, I had that taunting sensation of Dimitri being here, but not here.
"She did," said Sydney. "I saw the bodies, like always."
She wore that comically tormented expression of hers, and I laughed.
"At least I left them where you could find them this time."
My humor suddenly dimmed. "Did anyone... any other humans notice or hear?"
"I got rid of the bodies before anyone saw," she said. "If people heard anything... well, backwoods places like that are always filled with superstitions and ghost stories. They don't have factual evidence of vampires per se, but there's always sort of this belief that the supernatural and dangerous are out there."
"Little do they know."
She said ghost stories without any change of expression. I wondered if she'd seen any of the spirits last night, but finally decided she probably hadn't. She'd come outside near the tail end of the fight, and if past evidence was any indication, nobody else could see the spirits I saw, except Strogoi, as it turned out.
"You must have had some good training, then,"
said Carolina, shifting so the baby leaned against her shoulder.
"You look like you should still be in school."
"Just got out,"
I said, earning another scrutinizing look from Sydney.
"You're American," said Elena matter-of-factly. "What in the world could bring you out here?"
I'm looking for someone," I said after a few moments' hesitation. I was afraid they were going to press for details, or that she too would have blood whore suspicions. But just then, the kitchen door opened and Dimitri's grandmother, Yeva, walked in. She had poked her head in earlier and scared the hell out of me. Dimitri had told me that she was a witch of sorts, and I could believe it. She looked like she was a gazillion years old and was so thin, it was a wonder the wind didn't blow her away. She barely stood 5 feet tall, and her hair covered her head in patchy gray wisps. But it was her eyes that truly frightened me. The rest of her might be frail, but those dark eyes were sharp and alert and seemed to bore into my soul. Even without Dimitri's explanation, I would have taken her for a witch. She was also the only one in the household who didn't speak English. She sat down at one of the empty chairs, and Elena hastily jumped up to get some more blini. Yeva muttered something in Russian that made the others look uncomfortable. Sydney's lip twitched into a small smile. Yeva's eyes were on me as she spoke, and I glanced around for translation.
"What?"
I asked.
"Grandmother says you're not telling us the whole truth about why you're here. She says the longer you delay, the worse it will be,"
Victoria explained. She then gave Sydney an apologetic look.
"And she wants to know when the alchemist is leaving."
"As soon as possible," said Sydney dryly.
"Well, why I'm here, it's kind of a long story."
Could I be any vaguer?
Yeva said something else, and Elena retorted with what sounded like a chastisement. To me, she spoke gently.
Ignore her, Rose. She's in wonderful moods. Why you're here is your own business, although I'm sure Abe would like to talk to you at some point.
She frowned slightly, and I was reminded of the earlier looks at the table.
You should make sure you thank him. He seemed very concerned about you.
I'd kind of like to see him, too, I mumbled, still curious about this well-protected non-royal Maroi who had given me a ride and seemed to make everyone uneasy. Eager to avoid more talk of why I was here, I hastily changed the subject. I'd also love to look around Baia. I've never been in a place like this before. Where so many Dompiers live, I mean? Victoria brightened.
I can definitely give you a tour, if you're sure you're feeling okay, or if you don't have to leave right away.
She believed I was passing through, which was just as well. Honestly, I wasn't sure what I was doing anymore, now that it seemed likely Dimitri wasn't in the area. I glanced at Sydney questioningly. She shrugged.
Do whatever you want. I'm not going anywhere.
I found that a little disconcerting, too. She'd brought me here as her superiors had told her to do. But now what? Well, that was a concern for later. As soon as I finished my food, Victoria practically dragged me out the door, as if I was the most exciting thing that had happened around here in a while. Yeva hadn't taken her eyes off me for the rest of the meal, and even though she'd never said anything else, her suspicious look clearly told me she didn't believe a word I'd said. I invited Sydney along on the outing, but she declined, choosing instead to lock herself away in a bedroom to read about Greek temples or make world-controlling phone calls or do whatever it was she did. Victoria said downtown wasn't far from where they lived and was easy to walk to. The day was clear and cool, with enough sun to make being outside pretty pleasant.
We don't get a lot of visitors, she explained, except for Maroi men, but most don't stay long.
She added no more, but I wondered about her implications. Were these Maroi men off to find some action with Dompier women? I'd grown up thinking of these women, Dompiers who chose not to become guardians, as disgraceful and dirty. The ones in the Nightingale had certainly met the blood whore stereotype, but Dimitri had assured me that not all Dompier women were like that. After meeting the Belikovs, I believed him. As we approached the center of town, I soon discovered another myth shattered. People always talked about blood whores living in camps or communes, but that wasn't the case here. Baia wasn't huge, not like St. Petersburg or even Omsk, but it was a real town with a large human population. Hardly a rural camp or farm settlement. The whole setting was astonishingly normal, and when we reached downtown, lined with small shops and restaurants, it too seemed like any other place in the world people might live. Modern and ordinary, just with a slight village feel. Where are all the Dompiers? I wondered aloud. Sydney had said there was a secret Dompier subculture, but I saw no signs of it. Victoria smiled.
Oh, they're here. We have a lot of businesses and other places that humans don't know about.
While I could understand Dompiers going unnoticed in big cities, it seemed remarkable to pull that off here.
And lots of us just live and work with humans.
She nodded over toward what looked like a drugstore.
That's where Sonia works now.
Now?
Now that she's pregnant.
Victoria rolled her eyes.
I'd take you to meet her, but she's grumpy all the time lately. I hope the baby's early.
She left it at that, and I again wondered about the dynamics of Dompiers and Maroi here. We didn't mention it again, and our conversation stayed light and even teasing. Victoria was easy to like, and in only an hour, we'd clicked as though we'd known each other forever. Maybe my connection to Dimitri bound me to his family, too. My thoughts were cut off when someone called Victoria's name. We turned to see a very cute Dompier guy crossing the street. He had bronze hair and dark eyes, his age falling somewhere between mine and Victoria's. He said something chatty and conversational to her. She grinned at him and then gestured to me, giving my introduction in Russian.
This is Nikolai, she told me in English. Nice to meet you, he said, also switching languages.
He gave me a quick assessment in the way guys often do. But when he turned back to Victoria, it was clear who the object of his affections was.
You should bring Rose to Marina's party. It's Sunday night.
He hesitated, turning a bit shy.
You're going, aren't you?
Victoria turned thoughtful, and I realized she was completely oblivious to his crush.
I'll be there.
But, she turned to me,
will you still be around?
I don't know, I said honestly. But I'll go if I'm still here. What kind of party is it?
Marina's a friend from school, explained Victoria. We're just going to get together and celebrate before we go back.
To school? I asked stupidly. Somehow, it had never occurred to me that the Dompiers out here would be in school.
We're on break right now, said Nikolai, for Easter.
Oh. It was late April, but I had no clue what day Easter fell on this year. I'd lost track of the days. It hadn't happened yet, so their school must have their break the week before Easter. St. Vladimir's took its vacation afterward. Where is your school?
It's about 3 hours away. Even more remote than here.
Victoria made a face.
Why is not so bad?
Teased Nikolai.
Easy for you to say. You'll eventually leave and go see new and exciting places.
Can't you? I asked her. She frowned, suddenly uncomfortable.
Well, I could. But that's not how we do it here. At least not in my family. Grandmother has some strong opinions about men and women. Nikolai will be a guardian, but I'll stay here with my family.
Nikolai suddenly gave me a new appraisal.
Are you a guardian?
Well... Now I was the uncomfortable one. Victoria spoke before I could come up with anything to say.
She killed 2 Strogoi outside of town, by herself.
He looked impressed.
You are a guardian.
Well, no. I've killed before, but I'm not actually sworn. Turning around, I lifted up my hair to show them my neck. In addition to all my regular Molniya marks, I also had the little star-shaped tattoo that meant I'd been in a battle. They both gasped, and Nikolai said something in Russian. I let my hair drop and looked back. What?
Your...
Victoria bit her lip, eyes contemplative, as she groped for what she wanted to say.
Unpromised? I don't know the English word.
Unpromised? I said. I guess. But technically, aren't all the women here?
Even if we aren't guardians, we still get marks showing we've completed our training. No promise mark, though. For you to have killed so many Strogoi and have no loyalties to a school or the guardians?
Victoria shrugged.
We call it being unpromised. It's a strange thing.
It's strange where I come from, too, I admitted. Unheard of, really. So much so that we didn't have a term for it. It just wasn't done.
I should let you two go, said Nikolai,
his lovesick eyes back on Victoria.
But I'll see you at Marina's for sure. Maybe sooner?
Yes, she agreed. They said their farewells in Russian, and then he loped off across the street with the kind of easy, athletic grace guardians often acquired with training. It reminded me a bit of Dimitri's. I must have scared him off, I said.
No, he thinks you're exciting.
Not as exciting as he thinks you are. Her eyebrows rose.
What?
He likes you. I mean, really likes. Can't you tell?
Oh, we're just friends.
I could tell from her attitude that she meant it. She was completely indifferent to him, which was too bad. He was cute and nice. Letting poor Nikolai go, I brought up the guardians again. I was intrigued by the different attitudes around here.
You said you can't. But do you want to be a guardian?
She hesitated.
I've never really considered it. I get all the same training at school, and I like being able to defend myself. But I'd rather use it in defense of my family than Moroi. I guess it sounds...
She paused again to think of the right word.
Sexist? But the men become guardians and women stay at home. Only my brother left.
I nearly tripped. Your brother? I asked, keeping my voice as steady as possible.
Dimitri, she said. He's older than me and has been a guardian for a while. He's over in the United States, actually. We haven't seen him in a long time.
Huh. I felt horrible and guilty. Guilty because I was keeping the truth from Victoria and the others. Horrible because apparently no one from back home had bothered to pass the news onto his family yet. Smiling at her own memories, she didn't notice my change in mood.
Paul actually looks exactly like he did at that age. I should show you pictures of him. And some recent ones, too. Dimitri's pretty cute.
For my brother, I mean. I was sure seeing pictures of Dimitri as a little boy would rip my heart out. As it was, the more Victoria began to talk about him, the sicker I felt. She had no clue about what had happened, and even though it had been a couple of years since she'd seen him, it was clear she and the rest of the family loved him like crazy. Not that that should be a surprise. And really, who couldn't love Dimitri? Being around them just one morning had shown me how close they all were. I knew from Dimitri's stories that he was crazy about all of them, too.
Rose, are you okay?
Victoria was peering at me with concern, probably because I hadn't said anything in the last 10 minutes. We had circled around and were almost back at her house, looking at her open, friendly face and eyes that were so much like Dimitri's. I realized I had another task ahead of me before I could go after Dimitri, wherever he was. I swallowed. I think I need to sit down with you and the rest of your family.
Okay,
she said, the worry still in her voice. Inside the house, Elena was bustling around the kitchen with Carolina. I thought they were making plans for tonight's dinner, which was startling considering we'd just finished a huge breakfast. I could definitely get used to the way they ate around here. In the living room, Paul was building an elaborate racetrack out of Legos. Yeva sat in a rocking chair and appeared to be the world's most stereotypical grandmother as she knit a pair of socks. Except most grandmothers didn't look like they could incinerate you with a single glance. Elena was talking to Carolina in Russian but switched to English when she saw me.
You two are back earlier than I expected.
They sold the town, said Victoria. And Rose wanted to talk to you. To all of us.
Elena gave me a look as puzzled and concerned as Victoria's.
What's going on?
The weight of all those Belikov eyes on me made my heart start thumping in my chest. How was I going to do this? How could I explain something I hadn't spoken about in weeks? I couldn't stand to put them, or myself, through it. When Yeva scuttled in, it made things that much worse. Maybe she'd had some mystical sense that something big was about to go down. We should sit, I said. Paul stayed in the living room, for which I was grateful. I was pretty sure I couldn't handle saying what I had to with a little kid, one who looked like Dimitri, apparently, watching me.
Rose, what's wrong?
Asked Elena. She looked so sweet and, well, motherly that I nearly cried. Whenever I'd been angry with my own mother for not being around or doing a good job, I'd always compared her to some idealized image of a mom who seemed a lot like Dimitri's, I realized. Dimitri's sisters looked equally worried, like I was someone they'd known forever. That acceptance and concern made my eyes burn even more, seeing as they'd just met me this morning. Yeva wore a very strange expression, however, almost like she'd been expecting something like this all along.
Well, the thing is, the reason I came here, Tobiah, was to find you guys.
That wasn't entirely true. I'd come to search for Dimitri. I'd never thought much about finding his family, but now I realize that it was a good thing I had.
You see, Victoria was talking about Dimitri earlier.
Elena's face brightened when I said her son's name.
And I knew, know him. He used to be a guardian at my school. My teacher, actually.
Carolina and Victoria lit up as well.
How is he? Asked Carolina. It's been ages since we've seen him. Do you know when he's going to visit?
I couldn't even think about answering her question, so I pushed forward with my story before I lost my courage in front of all those loving faces. As the words came out of my mouth, it was almost like someone else was saying them and I was simply watching from a distance.
A month ago, our school was attacked by Strigoi,
a really bad attack. A huge group of Strigoi. We lost a lot of people. Maroi and Dompierre's both. Elena exclaimed in Russian. Victoria leaned toward me.
St. Vladimir's?
I halted in my story, surprised.
You've heard of it?
Everyone's heard of it, said Carolina. We all know what happened. That was your school? You were there that night?
I nodded.
No wonder you have so many Molniya marks, breathed Victoria in wonder.
And that's where Dmitri's at now?
Asked Elena.
We lost track of his latest assignment.
Yeah. My tongue felt thick in my throat. I couldn't breathe. I was at the school the night of the attack, I reaffirmed. And so was Dmitri. He was one of the leaders in the battle. And the way he fought, he was so brave, and... My words were breaking up, but by this point the others were catching on. Elena gasped and again murmured in Russian. I picked out the word for God. Carolina sat frozen, but Victoria leaned toward me. Those eyes that were so like her brother stared at me intently as he would if pushing me to tell the truth, no matter how awful.
What happened? She demanded. What happened to Dmitri?
I looked away from their faces, my eyes drifting to the living room. On the far wall, I caught sight of a bookcase filled with old, leather-covered books. They had gold embossed lettering on the spines. It was totally random, but I suddenly remembered Dmitri mentioning those. They were these old adventure novels my mother collected, he told me once. The covers were so beautiful and I loved them. If I was careful, she'd let me read them sometimes. The thought of a young Dmitri sitting in front of that bookcase, carefully turning the pages, and oh, he would have been careful, almost made me lose it. Had that been where he developed his love of Western novels? I was losing it. I was getting distracted. I wasn't going to be able to tell them the truth. My emotions were growing too powerful, my memories flooding me as I fought to think about something, anything, that didn't involve that horrible battle. Then I glanced at Yeva again, and something about her eerie, knowing expression inexplicably spurred me on. I had to do this. I turned back to the others. He fought really bravely in the battle, and afterward, he helped lead a rescue mission to save some people that the Strigoi had captured. He was really amazing there, too, only he... I stopped again and realized tears were running down my cheeks. In my mind, I was replaying that awful scene in the cave with Dmitri so close to freedom and taken by a Strigoi at the last minute. Shaking that thought away, I took another deep breath. I had to finish this. I owed it to his family. There was no gentle way to say it. One of the Strigoi there, well, he overpowered Dmitri. Carolina buried her face in her mother's shoulder, and Elena made no effort to hide her own tears. Victoria wasn't crying, but her face had gone perfectly still. She was working hard to keep her emotions in check, just as Dmitri would have. She searched my face, needing to know for sure.
Dmitri is dead, she said.
It was a statement, not a question, but she was looking to me for confirmation. I wondered if I'd given away something, some hint that there was still more to the story, or maybe she just needed the certainty of those words. And for a moment, I considered telling them that Dmitri was dead. It was what the Academy would tell them, what the Guardians would tell them. It would be easier on them. But somehow, I couldn't stand a lie to them, even if it was a comforting lie. Dmitri would have wanted the whole truth, and his family would too. No, I said, and for a heartbeat, hope sprang up in everyone's faces, at least until I spoke again. Dmitri's a Strigoi. Chapter 8. The reactions were mixed among Dmitri's family members. Some cried, some were stunned, and some, mainly Yeva and Victoria, simply took it in and kept their emotions from their faces, just as Dmitri would have done. That upset me almost as much as the tears. It reminded me too much of him. Out of all of them, pregnant Sonia, who came home shortly after the news broke, had the most intense physical reaction. She ran sobbing to her room and wouldn't come out. It didn't take long, however, for Yeva and Elena to spring into action. They spoke rapidly in Russian, clearly planning something. Phone calls were made and Victoria was dispatched to run an errand. No one seemed to need me, so I mostly wandered the house and tried to stay out of the way. I found myself studying the shelves I'd seen earlier, running my hands along the leather-bound books. The titles were in Cyrillic, but it didn't matter. Touching them and imagining Dmitri having held and read them somehow made me feel closer to him. "Looking for a little light reading?" Sydney walked up and stood beside me. She hadn't been around earlier but had heard the news. "Very light, seeing as I don't understand any of them," I replied. I gestured to the scurrying family members. "What's going on here?" "They're planning Dmitri's funeral," Sydney explained. "Or, well, his memorial service." I frowned. "But he's not dead." "Shh!" She cut me off with a sharp gesture and glanced warily at the others as they hustled around. "Don't say that!" "But it's true," I hissed back. She shook her head. "Not to them. Out here, out in these villages, there's no in-between state. You're alive or you're dead. They aren't going to acknowledge him being one of those." She couldn't keep the disgust out of her voice. "For all intents and purposes, he is dead to them. They'll mourn him and move on. So should you." I didn't take offense at her blunt attitude because I knew she hadn't meant to give any. It was just her way. The problem was, that in-between state was very real to me, and there was no way I could move on. Not yet. "Rose," began Sydney after several seconds of silence. She wouldn't meet my eyes. "I'm sorry."
"You mean for Dmitri?"
"Yeah. I had no idea. I haven't really been that nice to you. I mean, I'm not going to act like I feel any better about hanging out with your kind, but you guys are still, well, not human, obviously. But, I don't know, you still have feelings, you still love and hurt. And while we were coming here, you had all this horrible news in you, and I didn't make it any easier for you. So, I'm sorry for that. And I'm sorry for thinking the worst of you." At first, I thought she was talking about thinking I was evil, but then I got it. She thought this whole time that I was really coming to be a blood whore and now believed delivering the news to Dmitri's family had been my only purpose. I didn't bother to correct her. "Thanks, but you couldn't have known. And honestly, if I were in your place, I don't know. I'd probably act the same way."
"No," she said. "You wouldn't. You're always nice to people."
I gave her an incredulous look. "Have you been traveling with someone else these last few days? Back home, I've got a reputation for not always being so nice. I've got attitude, and I know it." She smiled.
"Yeah, you do. But you also say the right things to people when you have to. Telling the Belikovs what you did? Well, that was hard. And no matter what you say, you can be polite and go out of your way to make people feel good. Most of the time."
I was a bit startled. Was that how I appeared? I often thought of myself as a trigger-happy queen bitch and tried to think about my behavior with her these last few days. I had sparred with her a lot, but among the others we'd met, I supposed I had been friendly.
"Well, thanks," I said, not knowing what else to say.
"Did you see Abe yet, when you walked around town?"
"No," I said, realizing I'd forgotten about my mysterious rescuer.
"Should I have?"
"I just figured he'd find you."
"Who is he? Why did he come get us when you told him I was hurt?" Sydney hesitated, and I thought I was going to get some more of the alchemist's silent treatment. Then, after glancing around uneasily, she said in a low voice,
"Abe's not royal, but he's a really important guy. He's not Russian either, but he's in the country a lot, always on business. Both illegal and legal, I think. He's friends with all the important Moroi, and half the time, it seems like he controls the alchemists, too. I know he's involved in the process of making our tattoos, but his business goes far beyond that.
We have a name for him behind his back. Zmei.
Zmei what?
I had barely heard the word. It sounded like Zmei. It was certainly nothing I'd ever heard before. She gave a small smile at my confusion. Zmei is Russian for snake, but not just any snake. Her eyes narrowed as she pondered a better explanation. It's a term used in lots of myths, sometimes for giant snakes heroes have to battle. There are also a few stories about wizards with snake blood who get called that. The snake in the Garden of Eden, who made Eve fall, he was called Zmei too. I shivered. Okay, that was pretty freaky, but it made something click into place. The alchemist allegedly had ties to leaders and authorities, and Abe apparently wielded a lot of influence with them. Is Abe the one who wanted you to come with me to Baia? The reason the alchemist made you come here? Again, she paused, then nodded. Yeah. When I called that night in St. Petersburg, I was told there was a search going on for you. Abe gave orders through the alchemist for me to stay with you until he could meet up with us here. He's apparently been searching for you on someone's behalf. I went cold. My fears were being realized. People had been looking for me. But who? If Lyssa had initiated a manhunt, I would have sensed it when I visited her mind. I didn't think it was Adrian, either. Not from the way he seemed so desperate and clueless about my whereabouts. Plus, he seemed to accept my need for this quest. So who was looking for me? And for what reason? This Abe sounded like a high-ranking person, albeit someone involved in shady business. Someone who might very well be connected to the Queen or others almost as important. Had he been ordered to find me and bring me back? Or, considering how much the Queen hated me, had he perhaps been ordered to make sure I didn't come back? Was I dealing with an assassin? Sidney certainly seemed to regard him with a weird mix of fear and respect. Maybe I don't want to meet him, I said. I don't think he'll hurt you. I mean, if he wanted to, he already would have. But be careful. He's always playing several games at once, and he deals in enough secrets to rival the alchemists. So you don't trust him? She gave me a rueful grin as she turned to walk away. You forget. I don't trust any of you. When she was gone, I decided to go outside away from the sorrow and business indoors. I sat down on the top step of the backyard porch, watching Paul play. He was building a fort for some of his action figures. While sensitive to the grief in his family, it was hard for him to be too affected by the death of an uncle he'd only met a couple of times. The news didn't mean as much to him as it did to the rest of us. With so much time on my hands for the rest of the day, I decided to do a quick check-in with Lyssa. In spite of myself, I was kind of curious about how things had panned out with Avery Lazar. While Lyssa's intentions were good, she'd still had some misgivings about bringing Avery along to lunch. And yet, she was pleasantly surprised to see Avery fitting in perfectly, charming both Adrian and Christian. Admittedly, Adrian was impressed by pretty much anything female. Christian was harder to crack, but even he seemed to be growing fond of her. Probably because she kept teasing Adrian. Anyone who could make a joke at Adrian's expense ranked high on Christian's list.
So explain this, Avery said, winding linguine around her fork. You just what, hang around the academy all day? Are you trying to redo your high school experience?
Nothing to redo, said Adrian loftily. I totally ruled my high school. I was worshipped and adored. Not that that should come as a shock.
Beside him, Christian nearly choked on his food.
So, you're trying to relive your glory days? It's all gone downhill since then, huh?
No way, said Adrian. I'm like a fine wine. I get better with age. The best is yet to come.
Seems like it'd get old after a while, said Avery,
apparently not convinced by the compelling wine simile.
I'm certainly bored, and I even spend part of the day helping my dad.
Adrian sleeps most of the day, noted Lyssa, trying to keep a straight face. So he doesn't actually have to worry about finding things to do.
Hey, I spend a good portion of my time helping you unravel the mysteries of Spirit, Adrian reminded her.
Avery leaned forward, curiosity all over her pretty face.
So it's actually real? I heard stories about Spirit. About how you can heal people?
It took Lyssa a moment to respond.
She wasn't sure she'd ever get used to her magic being out in the open now.
Among other things, we're still figuring it out.
Adrian was more eager than she was to discuss it, probably in the hopes of impressing Avery, and provided a quick rundown of some of Spirit's abilities, like auras and compulsion.
And, he added, I can visit people in their dreams.
Christian held up a hand.
Stop. I can feel there's a comment coming on about how women already dream about you. I just ate, you know.
I wasn't going to go there, said Adrian. But he kind of looked like he wished he'd thought of the joke first. I couldn't help being a little amused. Adrian was so brash and flippant in public. And then, in my dreams, he'd show that serious and concerned side. He was more complex than anyone gave him credit for. Avery looked floored.
Man, I used to think using air was cool. I guess not.
A small breeze suddenly blew her hair back, making her look as though she were posing for a swimsuit photo shoot. She gave the group a dazzling smile. All that was missing was a photographer. The sound of the bell made them all stand up. Christian realized he'd left homework in another class and hurried off to get it, after kissing Lissa goodbye, of course. Adrian departed equally as fast.
The teachers start giving me dirty looks if I hang around once classes start.
He gave Lissa and Avery a small half-bow.
Until next time, ladies.
Avery, who couldn't care less about what teachers thought, walked with Lissa to her next class. The older girl's face was thoughtful.
So you really are with Christian, right?
Was she ever? If Avery'd seen half the things I'd seen Christian and Lissa do through the bond, there'd be no question. Lissa laughed.
Yes. Why?
Avery hesitated, piquing Lissa's curiosity.
Well, I heard that you were involved with Adrian.
Lissa nearly stopped walking.
Where did you hear that?
At court. The queen was saying how happy she is about you guys being a couple and how you're always together. Lissa groaned.
That's because whenever I go to court, she invites him too and then sends us both off to do things for her. It's not by choice. Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't mind spending time with him, but the reason we're always together there is because Tatiana makes us.
She seems to like you, though. She talks about you all the time, about how much potential you have and how proud she is of you.
I think she's proud to manipulate me. Going there is such a pain. She either completely ignores the fact that I'm dating Christian or takes whatever chance she can get to slip in insults about him.
Queen Tatiana, like so many other people, could never forgive Christian's parents for willingly turning Strigoi.
Sorry, said Avery, looking like she felt really bad. I didn't mean to bring up a bad subject. I just kind of wanted to know if Adrian was available, that's all.
Lissa wasn't mad at Avery. Her fury was turned toward the queen, at how she assumed everyone would behave the way she wanted and dance when she commanded it. The Moroi world had been ruled by a king or queen since the beginning of time, and sometimes Lissa thought it was time for a change. They needed a system where everyone had an equal say, royal and non-royal alike, even the Dompiers. The more she thought about it, the more she felt her temper spike, anger and frustration flaring up in a way more common to me than her. It made her want to scream sometimes, to walk right up to Tatiana and tell her their deal was off. No college was worth this. Maybe she'd even tell Tatiana that it was time for a revolution, time to overturn the Moroi's backward. Lissa blinked, astonished to find she was shaking. Where had that emotion come from? It was one thing to be upset with Tatiana, but this? She hadn't had such out-of-control rages since she first began using spirit. With a deep breath, she tried to use some of the calming techniques she'd acquired so that Avery wouldn't know what a nutcase she'd nearly turned into.
I just hate people talking about me, that's all, Lissa said at last.
Avery hadn't seemed to notice Lissa's lapse into anger.
Well, if it makes you feel better, not everyone thinks that about you. I met a girl.
Mia?
Yeah, that was her name, some non-royal.
Avery's dismissive tone suggested she held the view a lot of royals had toward common Moroi.
She just laughed about you and Adrian being together, said it was ridiculous.
Lissa almost smiled at that. Mia had once been Lissa's rival and a self-centered brat. But after Strigoi killed her mother, Mia had taken on a fierce, determined attitude, one both Lyssa and I liked immensely. Mia lived at court with her father, secretly training to fight so that she would be able to battle Strigoi someday.
"Oh," said Avery suddenly. "There's Simon. I should go."
Lyssa looked across the hall and saw